So I think it will turn out, actually, that the story of the Emperor's New Clothes will have quite a bit to do with what we're eventually going to be talking about. Most of what I have to say tonight, today has to do with that reading from Ephesians, which in the main is kind of a strange reading. There are a lot of pretty strange sort of first century influences coursing through that reading. And I'm not going to try to sort of unravel all of those. There's a single sort of idea called speaking the truth in love to one another that I want to talk about. Before I do, it's almost like a little prelude. Actually, it stands alone. It's about David and this story that continues from last week. And you remember last week we heard the fairly horrific story of David having an affair with Bathsheba, trying to cover it up, eventually having to kill Bathsheba's husband Uriah through a fairly pernicious scheme. We hear the follow-up to that. Don't really know, never know how this story became known, but clearly Nathan the prophet becomes aware of it and wants to confront David through sort of an entrapment parable. Tells him a story, gets David to respond to it, and then that wonderful directness. You are the man. You are the man. You respond with anger to this story of a guy, a rich man, taking the poor man's single ewe lamb. But you are the man. And I asked last week, what is it that marks David as a kind of a spiritual figure of significance in the Old Testament? And I said, you know, it's a little hard to tell because in many ways he is just a very powerful, very charismatic warrior king. And where does his sort of spirituality lie? And in today's story, one of the things that David does not do is he does not defend himself. He does not lie. He doesn't try to make up a story about it. He has done wrong, and what he says is, I have sinned against the Lord. He also did not kill Nathan, which, you have to imagine that to confront a king whose power is vastly superior to your own, Nathan, I mean, what's Nathan's state of mind as he's saying to David, the king, you are the man, and what prevented him from being run through? And David, he accepted self-understanding, and he didn't lie about it, and he didn't defend himself. He did not do what Paul later talks about as trying to justify himself. And so that weight of self-knowledge descended upon him. And I say, okay, David, that is actually a real move in the direction of spiritual maturity. Second thing about that story, you hear Nathan talk about the consequences of David's actions. And you hear him say, from this day the sword will never depart from your house. I will bring this trouble on you, says the Lord. And again, I think, you know, we can hear that without quite noticing. But passages like that tend to sort of seep into our awareness. God punishes David. God brings trouble on him. And I think 3,000 years down the line, especially following the revelation of Jesus' attempt to make the true God known, we would have to say it is not God who punishes David. It is not God who brings trouble on David, the sword and infidelities and rebellions. You have to say either that's the way the world works or it's the consequences of David's own actions. And he would have to bear that responsibility for himself. So that, and again, it's this continuing activity of trying to get clear in our hearts who God really is. And there has been a very old and persistent understanding that God is the God who punishes us. And on the other side, the New Testament, John, the epistles of John say, God has been revealed to us as the one in whom there is no darkness at all. No darkness at all. God is not bringing suffering and trouble upon David. If that comes, it is David who has brought it upon himself. And again, I say this without any any sort of pretension to understand the relation of God to creation. I don't know how God works with our freedom, how God interacts. I mean, those are the biggest questions about suffering and about justice and about the way the world works and about evil. And I, you know, I would, would that I could unravel them all for you, but no, I'm sorry. But again, just as a step along the way, God is not the one who punishes. That's not the nature of God. And just trying to, again, clarify and purify this way we represent God to ourselves. This is from 3,000 years ago. I think following Jesus, we might say it somewhat differently. Okay, that's sermon number one. Now we go to sermon number two. Speaking the truth in love to one another is that line from Ephesians today. And the more I've thought about it this week, the more I think that were we to practice that, were we to understand what that really might mean, and were we to practice it, that is maybe a very concise, very powerful description of what the Christian life really is about. And let me set a little bit of context. And again, the emperor's new store, the emperor's new clothes, sets a context in a certain way where everybody sort of half sees something going on, but won't be honest with themselves about it. And so they begin to deceive themselves. And it's that voice of honesty that speaks out, that voice that still is in touch with its own direct perception, and says, the emperor has no clothes on. And we, you know, everybody goes, ah, ha, ha. And I've told this story many times for those of you who've been around a while. I mean, because I love the story, and I think it's essential to sort of spiritual development. And as what I almost always say is, if this were told in a biblical sense, the small child who said that would have been killed. They would, that within the biblical framework, there is often a very intense and violent reaction to that kind of truth-telling. The emperor has no clothes on. Instead of saying, I don't, say, put the child, put, you know, kill it. There is, in the diagnosis of virtually every spiritual tradition in the world, and certainly within our own, it is understood that there are some fairly deep sources of disorder at work in our world. We call it being sinful. But that word itself almost always needs to be sort of opened up a little bit. As a single word, it doesn't mean all that much anymore. So imagine that in our world, in our daily life, there is a world of surface appearances. We are sociable with each other. We say familiar, predictable things to our family members. We say things to our coworkers. We read the newspaper and we go, there's the surface appearance of things. And then beneath that surface, there is a story that runs, in many ways, unexposed. It's a story of maybe a self-interest. It's the story of fear. It's the story of anger. It's also the story of aspirations that we're maybe not quite willing to acknowledge to ourselves. Places of tenderness that we are maybe afraid of that might make us too vulnerable. There is a story that runs beneath the surface of things. The Christian affirmation is this, that there is nothing that will reveal that hidden story except the heart that is opened by love. The heart that is opened by the love of, and it's you say, as we say so often, that is what it means to speak of Christ within us. It means that you see the world around you and you see yourself with a heart that is opened by love. And it is love alone that reveals the truth of things. The truth of that story that runs usually unexpressed, runs beneath the surface of things. And how much would the world change if to speak the truth in love meant that as we go forth from this place, as we go forth from this room, we go into our families, we go into our relationship with ourselves, we go into our relations with co-workers, asking always that our hearts be opened to love, that we see what is actually going on, and we speak and relate to each other at that level. This kind of deeper honesty guided by love. Now, this is not always our experience with truth. And I've said this before too, but again, it bears repeating, that when we hear somebody's going to come at us with the truth, you know, cover up, because you're going to get beat up. You know, somebody who comes at you with the truth does not necessarily come at you with the truth as it is discerned by love. They may see some part of you, but they may come at you saying, I'm going to get you. Whereas love asks, you know, a series of questions, but basically, how can I help this one? Or how? And maybe you don't even do that. Maybe you're not even that. You don't have that much of a motive. But it is that gaze of compassion on those around us that sees us for who we are, yearning, suffering, often frightened, sometimes alone, and we speak to that directly. I would say the paramount quality for doing this is a spirit of humility. That we, you know, our hearts may be moved by love, but whoa, do I think I have the full story? Do I think I see everything in its total clarity? Unlikely. There's a wonderful story. Thomas Merton, near the end of his life, began to do a series of translations from the Chinese. And there's a sort of second generation Taoist scholar named Kuan Tzu. And he translated these Chinese stories. And there's one called The Fasting of the Heart, where a guy comes to a master and says, I've got a great plan to go out and change the world. And he says, No, you can't do it. You're just going to wreck things. And he kept coming back and back and back to the master. And the master kept saying, basically, you've got to let go of what you think needs to happen in the world. You've got to let go of your own agendas. You've got to let go of your own, you know, you're way too full of yourself. You think you're going to change things and you're just going to make everything worse. And so he joined upon him this process of the fasting of the heart, where, and that's what I'm sort of talking about as humility. The understanding that we see with the eyes of love. We see with the eyes of love, but we still see through a glass darkly. And we still have our own agendas, and we still have our own biases, and we still have so many of the sort of uncovered, still covered up secrets of our own hearts that blind us in some way. So we speak the truth in love to one another, but we offer it with deep humility. It's our best shot. And you don't have to be completely right. It's the shift toward beginning the desire to speak with deeper honesty in love toward one another. Jesus said, the truth will set you free. Dealing with the truth of things, not with our fictions of the surface story. Everybody, we all have our own press secretaries. You know, they hand out, you know, this is what's going on. And nobody believes it, of course, because it's a spin. But to deal with the deeper truth of what's going on in love. And this will complete things, I think. This is what it means to be a witness for Christ. It's not going out and telling people about Jesus. It's not trying to get people to agree with a bunch of ideas that you have about the way the world is, and here's God, and here's Jesus, and here's this. I mean, that is the kind of barrage that every one of us in this room has been subjected to at one time or another. And it's not about that. It's going out as the opening. I substituted a passage of scripture for the call like today. You're the light of the world. You're the light of the world. We're going out into the world to speak the truth in love to one another, with humility, with full awareness that we are all capable of being fairly blind and self-interested. But nonetheless, the daily prayer, deepen and deepen and deepen. Speak the truth in love to one another. It will set us free, and it will set the world free. Set the world free.